You are listening to Your Pod and Your Staff, the podcast of College Life Christian Fellowship at UC Davis. And I am Peter Nittler, the college pastor of First Baptist Church in Davis, California. And our mission is to shape college-age people from all spiritual starting points into complete and equipped agents of King Jesus. And on this podcast, we want to have conversations that will form you, encourage you, maybe even make you laugh. And we hope that these conversations would be a source of King Jesus guiding you through this time. Now, we didn't always do podcasts on Friday morning. We actually used to meet on Tuesday nights and have some fun together, worship Jesus, and listen to a talk. And in the last Tuesday night talk of the year, my wife, Katie, spoke on what happened when Israel returned from their devastating Babylonian exile. And she told the stories of three leaders who led Israel back to Jerusalem. Now, it didn't always go great for these leaders, but the point is this, that in coming back from exile, the world looked different. People couldn't just go back to the way things were. People needed to be led. And if you've been listening with us this quarter, you know that we've likened this COVID crisis to something like an exile. We are forced to be apart from each other. We are often confused about how God is active and moving, and we long to be back to what we knew. And someday, this exile will be over. And when it is finally over, we won't be able to just go back to life as normal. We too will have to be led into a new reality and into new ways of living together and with God. And that's what this conversation is all about. To start the process of finding who among us will say yes to leading this community back out of exile. This is the moment we turn our eyes to the future and start to figure out what our leadership team will look like next year. This is the moment where next year's 12 is born. And so first, Miriam and I are going to tell you everything and more that you wanted to know about the 12. The inspiration, the principles behind the team, the hopes, the dreams, and the expectations. And then you'll hear from some very special guests about what it's really like to be a leader in college life. And as of right now, we're accepting applications. And if our conversation piques your interest, you can go to the episode notes to find a downloadable copy of the application. But no matter where you're at in life, the heart behind this conversation and the ideas underneath it, we think are useful for anyone at any time. I hope you agree. Enjoy the pod. Welcome back to Your Pod and Your Staff. It is me, Peter, and I am joined by my colleague and my friend, the College Life Director, Miriam Hamilton. Hi, Miriam.
Hi, Peter.
It's just the two of us today.
I know. It's like a staff meeting.
It's like a staff meeting. It's like we're just turning on the mics and putting on a staff meeting, which means people are in for about a 2 to 4 hour episode if they're ready for it.
Right. And probably only about 45 minutes of that will be real content. The rest will just be jokes.
That's right.
And what we had for breakfast.
That's right. Very, very important what you had for breakfast. What did you have for breakfast today?
This morning, I made some scrambled eggs and my dad made some bacon. It was a tag team effort.
If you could go back and redo it, I'm sure you would make fried eggs, right?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Well, agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree.
Episode 4 of Your Pod and Your Staff is happening right now, which is very exciting. It's been very fun to do. And what has been really fun and sort of surprising is that we make this podcast for, you know, the College Life community. But what's been really, really fun is to hear not only the College Life community's thoughts, but to hear the thoughts from the different like alumni who've been listening and texting me or getting in touch with Stanford and Bronwyn. So it's been cool to see the listenership be bigger than even just the initial audience we had in mind. And what's been really cool to me is that about 10% of our listeners are 60 and above, and which is awesome.
That's right. Awesome. Okay. I'm going to ask my dad how many times he watched it.
Part of the reason we bring that up is that our goal has been to create content for the College Life community. And it just so happens that most of that content is sort of applicable to people of all ages and stripes. So it's been cool to hear us bless people from different moments of life or stages of life. But this particular episode is going to be a little bit more in-house. And we are at this part of the year, part of the quarter, even though it's so weird, it doesn't even feel like it's spring quarter at all. We're in that part of the quarter where we are talking about and thinking about next year. And always during spring quarter, we start to put our sights on the fall. And one of the most important things about next year is who's going to be on the College Life leadership team. And we call it the 12, more on that in a bit. And so this is the time of year we would spend one Tuesday night just talking about the 12, just pitching the team and asking for people to apply. And then we start having conversations about what sort of roles that they could fill. And we don't have Tuesday nights to do that with. So we're going to do this in podcast form. And that's kind of that's what this episode's going to be all about, is sort of explaining what the 12 is, giving people a chance to know what it is, what it means to be a leader in College Life, what it means to be a member of the 12, sort of some expectations, and ask those who are ready to apply. and really some things about what you and I love about this leadership team. And also you'll have a chance to hear from your own peers who are in the 12 right now and just what their experience has been like. And so here's the gimmick, Miriam. Here's what we're going to do. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay. We are going to do 12 things about the 12.
That's so clever.
People make fun of us, okay, because our team is called the 12 and we have many more than 12. So we are not a stickler to the number system.
That's very true. And that was a surprise to me when I showed up too.
But today we are going to do it by the book, okay? There's going to be 12 things about the 12. Again, it's going to be kind of a mix of things that we are excited about, that we have learned, that are the reason behind why this team exists, and also some expectations and a chance to hear from your peers. And so what we're going to do is we're going to switch off. I'm going to give one, you're going to give one, I'm going to give one, you're going to give one, all the way until we get to 12.
Sounds great.
You ready for this?
I'm ready. Let's get started.
Okay, so because the logo for our team is in Roman numerals, it's an X and an I and an I, I am going to do mine and my numbers based on Roman numerals. Feel free to do whatever you want, Roman numerals or non-Roman numerals.
Okay, we'll see where the spirit leads.
Okay, so here's the first one. 12 thoughts on the 12, and I is the first one, okay? You ready for it?
Yeah, ready.
Why are you even here? Okay. Why are you even here? Why do you exist as a human being? Okay, so this is, we're going to start at like the very, very top. This is like worldview kind of questions of like, is there a God? Why do human beings exist? What's the point of life? How do you get happiness? These are very, very important questions. And we're going to talk about the first one because it's why this leadership team exists. It's the first thing we need to talk about. Okay, so I'm going to try and do this quickly. But if you were to open the first few pages of Genesis, you'd find this story of a God who creates the world and he creates human beings. And there are other stories like that. One in particular, it's called the Enuma Elish, and it's a Babylonian origin story. And what's interesting about it is that there's a lot of similarities, but what scholars are always talking about, what's actually interesting about these things is how they're different. And the way that the Genesis account is very different from the Enuma Elish is that, one, the Enuma Elish, the world is created out of violence and sex and all sorts of just crazy drama, as opposed to out of love. In Genesis, God creates this not because he had to, but because he sort of wanted to. And so there's a sort of difference there. But another difference is that human beings in the Enuma Elish and other stories that were circulating in the ancient Near East were basically always slaves to the gods. And they were made from blood and violence and warfare. And then that's why they were created, so that the gods could relax and they could just do their bidding. What's different about the Genesis account is that the human beings are supposed to do things. But what it says is that the human beings are supposed to partner with God in creation. So God has just created this whole world. And it says that the human beings were made in his image. And what God says to these people is that he wants them to basically rule, subdue, and have dominion over this earth. And so what he's saying to them is essentially, okay, I've made this world. It's a wonderful world. And what I want to give to you is the opportunity to rule it with me, to have dominion over it with me. So we're going to partner together and we're going to rule this place together. Okay. And so like, that's why we're here, is to rule with God and to the original intent, the original design of what God wanted, which was this Eden, which was this place of relationship with him. And our job was to take that pocket of creation and to take it to the ends of the earth and to do that with God. Okay. So that's sort of the first idea. Here's the second idea that's all under why are you even here? Okay. Because it often seems to me like, you know, even when we pray to God, we often pray for God to do stuff. God, would you encourage my sister? Or God, would you help Timothy know that he is loved? Or something like that. And I think what this means, this idea of why are you even here, the fact that we are partnering with God, that God is not actually just going to do stuff, that God is choosing to actually hitch his wagon to these human beings and rule his world alongside them and with them. What it means is that we are often the answers to the prayers that we pray. If we say, God, would you encourage my sister's heart? What he might say is like, hey, actually, you have dominion and you have some responsibility. You are my agent in this world. You go do it. I'll go with you, but you go do it. Things don't necessarily just happen by God snapping his fingers. Things happen in God's world by God moving in the world through human beings. And so one of my favorite ways that you see this comes in Exodus. And there are many, many great places to stop and look and admire in Exodus. And what I'm about to tell you is not one of those places. Like, the first half of Exodus is like jam-packed with action. It's like, what's a good action film?
Die Hard.
Die Hard, sure. It's like Die Hard. I mean, just like things happening there. Moses is cast away, sent to death. Let my people go, and plagues, and they cross the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of stuff going on. But what happens is they get to this mountain, Mount Sinai, and then God wants to spend time with his people. And so he instructs them to build a tabernacle. And so this really, really, really exciting story just comes to like a screeching halt. Like when you're on the Matterhorn in Disneyland and at the end of the ride, you know, you're just going and going and going and going. And then it just comes to a, just an unbelievable halt.
Oh, it's terrible.
Stop. It's the worst. And especially it was the worst back in the day when they didn't have separate seats and you were like straddling someone.
Yeah.
That was a tough day.
That's tough.
But what's interesting is that God tells them in such excruciating detail of what the tabernacle, which was going to be his little house where he was going to spend time with the Israelites, mm-hmm. what that was going to look like. Mm-hmm. It was this big tent with like inner court and outer court, and it had all sorts of curtains and all sorts of different things. And he was telling them how that was going to look. Mm-hmm. And so we have him with this desire, like he wants it to be done in a certain way. And mm-hmm. yet we still see the same sort of, why are you here, emphasis of like, no, well, like I want something in a certain way, but I'm not going to just do it. Like you're going to mm-hmm. build this thing. And so he gives these super detailed instructions. And so it seems like he has these two goals. He has this, I want this done in a certain way, but I'm going to use human beings to do it. And so just to give you a little taste of like what the precision was like, I'm going to read to you just a little bit because it's going to be painful, but I'm going to do it in the voice of Chris Traeger from Parks and Rec, who just has a very particular way of talking. This is what God says to the Israelites. This is chapters and chapters and chapters of this. He says, you shall make the altar of acacia wood, 5 cubits broad. The altar shall be square and its height shall be 3 cubits, and you shall make horns for it on its 4 corners. Its horn shall be of 1 piece with it, and you shall overlay it with bronze. You shall make pots for it to receive its ashes, and shovels and basins and forks and fire pans. And that is 3 verses out of 8 on the construction of the bronze altar. So this goes on and on and on again. And another thing you see in the scriptures is that God wants human beings to rule the world with him, and yet they continually mess it up. I guess what I find so interesting about this is that if you were to go to www.google.com and you were to type in sort of how not to delegate, because this is what God's doing. God is delegating a task. Mm-hmm. He's saying, I want this thing done. You do it. Here are the instructions. Mm-hmm. If you were to tell someone, here's how to not delegate. Some of the two most prescient things that would be on the top list of how not to delegate. Number one is don't micromanage.
Which is this.
Which is this. Like, he's just totally micromanaging them. Right. It's like, this is exactly how I want it done. If you stray from this, it's no good. Okay, so don't micromanage. And that's what seems like what God is doing. And the other one is don't delegate to the wrong person.
Which is us.
Which is us, right? It's like we are the wrong, we continually mess things up, and yet God continues to sort of hitch his wagon to us and mm-hmm. say, now I want you guys to build the kingdom. I want you guys to bring my good world. I want this good world. I'm not going to sacrifice that, but I want you guys to bring it. Hmm. And so that's sort of where we're starting, I guess, about even thinking about the 12, is that it sort of fits into the stream that has been what the scriptures have been telling us, that God gave Adam and Eve a responsibility to lead his world and to rule with his world. God gave Abraham responsibility. He says, your family is going to be the family that I get my world through. He gave Moses responsibility, and he continues to do this through like the judges and the kings, saying, I want to rule my world through you and with you. I'm not just going to do it myself. And so you guys are going to have to do stuff. You're going to have to lead. You're going to have to step out. You're going to have to be my representatives here. So that's where we want to start the conversation, because that's what we hope for our student leaders, is that they're stepping into this grand vision of what human beings are supposed to do. Okay, so that was a long one. That'll be my longest, I promise. So that was number one. That was I. What do you have for I? What do you think, Merm?
I. Well, first of all, that was so interesting. I love the idea of like this creation account is like born out of love instead of violence and chaos like the other myths. Yeah, yeah. And we're just brought into it and dignified into it. And that's like the big picture story. And somehow in college life, we have this little invitation into that story in the 12.
Yeah, really what we should be seeing it as is that there's this inherent dignity that we have that God is giving mm-hmm. us. And I think sometimes we wish God did more. But if we take a step back and say, well, he's actually entrusting us who continually fail and continually don't do things well, he's entrusting us with this massive responsibility. And you only entrust that, I think, to people you love and to people that you want to see grow and you want to see thrive. And so I think that's good news.
I think so too. That's a good way to start. All right. What I've got for I is something I like to call laughter and tears.
Okay. Make the case.
Make the case. Well, on the 12, there's something that fascinates me about the way that a community is bonded together by a one unified goal to serve. And And oftentimes that comes with a lot of laughter and tears. And I think the 12 embodies this really well because we're challenged to follow Jesus in a way that for many students, they haven't before, or they just are in a new way. And it's challenging. And there will probably be times when if you're on the 12, you are really tired and really disillusioned and maybe at the point of tears. But at the same time, you have your whole team who's there with you doing it together. And there's this moment when you sort of look around and it's like, even in the midst of all the tears, there's just this really deep, satisfying laughter too of like, these are my people and we are working together and we are just sort of discovering this new life and accomplishing this goal together. And I just am really fascinated by how that happens. It's like the quality of friendship changes fundamentally. It seems to me that the best friendships develop when they're in pursuit of a goal outside of the relationship.
Yeah.
And the best goal is the one of following Jesus.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of mystery of like when you're not so focused on the relationship itself, but together on pursuing this goal of looking towards your Savior and following him, then you sort of get to a certain point and you look around and you realize like, oh, how did I make all these friends? I've had this experience a few times in my life, but I remember one year when I was working for Sunshine on my driver team, there were 10 of us. It was me and my two friends, Laura and Rachel, and then 7 dudes. And most of them were like these ultra bros from Fresno who like loved country music and
tank tops. We talking tank tops?
Oh yeah. All day, every day. People who honestly, like, I never would have found myself in my circle if I were just like choosing friends, but they were on my team. And I remember literally like telling people, can you pray for me? Like, I'm not sure how this summer is going to go. But I remember coming to the end of the summer and just having this deep affection for them because there's a unity in diversity and a unity that comes from pursuing one goal together and saying, I trust you because I know that you are also after the same thing I'm after, which is to serve our King. And we get to do it in this really unique context of, in that instance, serving on a driver team together for Sunshine that summer. And for the 12, it's serving this college life community in whatever role you're given. And in that context, you pursue Jesus together and you get to the end. You're tired, but in all of it, there's laughter and tears at the same time. And you look around and you think, oh my gosh, how did I make all these friends?
Yeah. Do you think it's accurate to say that when you're in a situation like this, where your main thing is actually serving together, your main thing, like why you exist as a community is to serve together, then along the way, friendship happens?
Yeah, I think that's it. And there's something really powerful about it not being about the friendships, but that the friendships still come.
Yeah, yeah. Often we think to be good friends, you should focus on the friendship is the goal. Where you're saying that in these particular settings, what's so beautiful about it is that the goal isn't necessarily friendship, but friendship comes and a deep friendship.
Right, right.
That seems like good news.
I think so.
So apply for the 12 and serve with people who might just become some excellent friends.
Yeah.
So that's II, that's two?
That's II.
Okay, I'm going with III, my third. Third one is, this is what's called, what's in a name? Are you intrigued?
I'm intrigued.
All right, what's in a name? Okay, I want to explain the name, the 12, because if we are not going to have 12 people, it seems nonsensical, it seems ridiculous, it seems confusing. And so why do we call this thing the 12? Actually, you know who came up with it first?
Who?
Was my wife, Caitlin, maiden name, DeSantis.
That's right.
Married name, Knittler. And we were thinking about what we wanted this team to be called back when we were inventing it a couple years ago. And we wanted something that really fit who we were and what we wanted the culture of this team to be. So we thought about it and we were thinking that, well, this is going to necessarily be a sort of inner circle. Like, this team is going to have more responsibility. Mm-hmm. This team's going to have more say in how the community goes. This team's going to get more time with the staff just because we're leading this thing together. So there's a certain sense that it's sort of an inner circle, just like how Jesus had an inner circle of 12 disciples. There were 12 people who just got more. But the whole thing only works if that inner circle doesn't stay in inner circle, but their main focus is to turn around and then go bless the church and go build the church. And so that was sort of the goal. It's like, we are going to be an inner circle. And hopefully, just like you said, like, we are going to hopefully be close. We're not going to try to pretend that we're not. We're going to have fun together. We're going to like doing this together. But our main goal is not to stand shoulder to shoulder looking inward. Our goal is to stand shoulder to shoulder and then sort of like walk outward together and go build the rest of the community. Go make sure that the rest of the people who are not in the circle are thriving even more than we are. So that's why we're called the 12, is because we want to image this sort of tight inner circle that doesn't exist to stay in inner circle, but actually goes and exists to build.
Right.
And so if there's ever been any confusion, why do you call it the 12 if there's like much more than 12 on the team? That's why, because we're hearkening back to this particular image of Jesus in the disciples. So that is I. What do you got for us? IV.
IV. Oh, it sounds...
Which is four, by the way.
Yeah. I think I like four better than IV. I'm going to go okay, with
you
four
do what you're
on this
do.
One.
I'm sticking to Roman numerals.
Okay, okay. Well, number four is the old adage, the seed of potential is cracked under the weight of responsibility. Dun, dun, dun. This...
Explain,
okay,
explain.
Okay. Well, this comes from a verse in John 12. I'm going to read it. John 12, 23 through 26. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Whoever loves his life loses it, and whoever hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. If anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. So from that verse, we get this sort of image of a grain of wheat falling to the earth and dying, and from that death, life being born. And of course, it comes right after this line, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified, which is Jesus looking ahead to his own crucifixion and his own death that he passes through and then is resurrected into new life. So it's sort of the ultimate image of this. And he's inviting us into that same call to go and to follow him into and through death and into new life. And on the 12, we have this really amazing opportunity to step into those moments of mini deaths. And I hesitate to say that because it's not exactly a great pitch. But it really is a fundamental part of the Christian life, is being willing to follow Jesus and knowing that where you're going is oftentimes Calvary. And I think probably one of the first times that many people on the 12 realize this is during Welcome Week, when you're working really long hours and you're probably doing a lot of things you don't really want to be doing. Like for me, as somebody who's a bit less extroverted than you are, going and talking to a bunch of strangers about joining a Christian fellowship, like, feels like a mini death. Like the anxiety wells up and I'm like, okay, just do it. But there are a lot of moments when if you choose to apply to be on the team, then you're likely going to set yourself up to be really tired at times. Probably you'll be mad at me and mad at Peter and your teammates. You'll be disillusioned. You'll probably resent the vulnerability that's required of you at times. I don't know, whatever it may be, there are these moments of death, but there's this exciting new life that comes with it. And one of my favorite parts about walking with students through leadership is watching them begin to understand and realize that, like, it is through those moments that they come closer to the foot of the cross and that there's some deep transformation that's happening. I remember this time towards the end of the summer a few years ago. It was the middle of the week. It was the last week of the summer, and it was the busiest week of the summer. And I was so tired. I was just so tired. And we had to get up at 4:30 that day to start rearranging our...
A.M.?
In the morning. Yeah, we had to get up at 4:30 in the morning.
Why?
Stanford's going to be listening like small potatoes. Yeah. And my friend came in to wake me up in the morning, and she like crawled into my little bunk. She was like, okay, morning, Miriam, it's time to get up. She's so cute. And I turned to her I was like...
Wait, did she ask you if you brushed your teeth? That's not going to make any sense to someone who hasn't listened to other podcasts.
And I just remember she's like laying in my bunk with me, trying to like really sweetly wake me up. And the two of us just like started giggling at like how tired we were. And then the giggling really quickly turned into me just crying. This is the laughter and tears too. And she looks at me with that sort of confused look of like, wait, are you serious? Like, I'm so tired. I don't want to wake up at all. It was so ridiculous. And it seems like, I mean, that's kind of a silly example, but I remember thinking, I don't want to do this. I want to sleep. I want what I want right now, but I've been called and invited into this kind of small death, and the responsibility that I've been given feels weighty to me. But in those summers, I realized a sort of substance to myself that I didn't realize was there before. And it was in the challenge of the responsibility that was given to me and the moments when I was asked to deny myself and to follow Jesus in not staying in bed, but getting up and being diligent in what I've been asked to do. And it might suck, but I trust that you are a God of resurrection life in all things, including the pain of waking up at 4:30 in the morning and just wanting to sleep a little bit longer.
Right. Or the pain of lifting couches again.
Right.
So we can go on top of the parking structure and do Serial Under the Stars.
Exactly.
And so are you saying that you, Miriam, have this potential and that's not going to get realized without some responsibility placed on you that might not always be exciting to do, but to do it is to realize your potential?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't like it a lot, but I trust it.
Yeah, or it's even like what we talked about with the rhythms stuff. It's like sometimes you're not doing the rhythms and your habits for that day's joy. Sometimes you're doing it to become a certain kind of person, that it's like to accept more responsibility, which is going to be frustrating sometimes because you're going to be busy, you're going to be tired of it, but to accept the responsibility and to live in the responsibility, you might just unlock some potential that you didn't know you had, or maybe is latent in you, or just that you're surprised that you had. So you're going to grow.
You're going to grow.
That actually, okay, that fits pretty well into my next one. So I'm going to cut you off. Was that IV?
That was IV. You're on four.
I'm on V, which is five. The completest and the equippest. Okay? That's number five. So we have this mission. We say at the beginning of this podcast, we say at the beginning of every Tuesday night, and it sort of drives everything we do. We want to be a community that takes people from all spiritual starting points and helps shape them into complete and equipped agents of King Jesus. And different things that we do throughout your 4 years with us in College Life, if you're kind of swimming in our waters for 4 years, you know, that's why we go on the scripture retreat. That's why we go on the freshman retreat. That's why we teach about certain things we teach about, because we want, by the time you graduate, for you to sort of have a certain experience that we think will launch you into a certain kind of person that is set up for more joy in the future. And really, being on this team is logically the conclusion of that project. If you come in as a freshman, you find your tribe, and then as a sophomore, you are trying on the leadership shoes, but also you're still getting to know your people and you're navigating the sophomore waters, which can be quite difficult sometimes. And then once you're a junior or senior, you have this chance to step into leadership role and be on the 12. And then at that point, you sort of take the turn into really becoming that complete and equipped person that we imagine, because we want to graduate people. I say this all the time, but I'm sort of obsessed with the walking across the podium, the students are accepting their diploma. Like, what kind of person are they at that point? Because I want so badly for them to be a certain kind of person. And I want them to be a kind of person who knows that it's their role to be a kingdom builder, not just a Christian consumer who waits for things to happen to them, but is someone who knows that their role in the kingdom is to help build it. And that's going to be hard sometimes, and churches aren't always going to be that fun. But we want you to be a kind of person who knows that my role is to use my gifts to bless this world. And this is sort of practice for serving in the local church setting. And, you know, this idea of being sort of like a kingdom builder and not just a consumer is so kind of important to me, that that's one of the big reasons we named our son Mason. A Mason is a builder. And one thing that we pray for him a lot is that he would be like a builder of the kingdom. And so this is really the main heart and the main thrust of what we want to do with students, is to take you from wherever you're at into someone who makes a habit of serving the kingdom in a particular way, like using your gifts or even the gifts you don't know you have yet to bless the kingdom, to serve people, to serve the church. And so that's really why we get so excited about this, is because this is one of the most important things that we do as a ministry. And one of the biggest hopes that we have is that you'd sort of become this kind of person. Right. So
I feel inspired.
Do you feel inspired?
I do.
By V? Yeah.
Also, Mason, if he just like doesn't do anything else for the rest of his life but giggle, I think he will have contributed to the kingdom more than I could ever hope to.
He contributes a lot of joy in our little outpost at 1366 Tyler Drive.
That's great.
Okay, that's five. What's six? Or
six.
Me, what's V1?
Whoa,
no, VI.
What's
VI?
Whoa. Okay, VI. Well, VI is a continuation of the completest and the equipest.
There you go.
I got it. VI is, it doesn't just happen to you. It takes time and intentionality. Okay, so this one comes from this idea I was actually just reading about a few days ago. You know, there's all these different developmental theories on the process of life and how humans move from one phase of development to the next. And I was reading about this developmental theory by this guy, J. Robert Clinton, or Bobby Clinton. He teaches at Fuller. And
Fuller!
And he has these four phases of development. One is foundation, two, preparation, three, contribution, and then finally, multiplication. And most of us right now are in the first two phases of foundation and or preparation, where what's happening there is that we're developing our habits and practices, which is what we talked about a few weeks ago. We're maturing in our commitments to following Jesus. We're being tested in our faith and developing our character. We're essentially just trying to figure out who we are, to understand our identity, and to discover and develop our own giftings.
This is incredible.
Isn't this incredible? You know, I often think about people like, for instance, Bronwyn. Like, I see her live her life, and, you know, I was listening to the podcast from last week and thinking, she so often embodies the person that I want to be. I want to be someone like her when I'm older, and I want to be someone like her now. But there's this frustration in me of like, I just feel like I am so far from that person. And I was reading this and I was feeling so relieved because I was thinking and realizing that the stage of life I'm in right now is much more about like establishing the foundation and preparing me for that later stage of contribution, which is a bit more where she's at in her life. And I feel relieved when I think about how Jesus also had to grow into himself. He had to develop and he had to wrestle with his own identity. Like, yeah. He had to figure out who he was and what he was all about. And I think about, like, you know, his temptation in the wilderness and that as being sort of like a preparation for his ministry and how it didn't just happen to him either. And that gives us a little bit of space to spend some time and to have some patience for ourselves as we are becoming the people who we were meant to be. And that process is continual and ongoing and really exciting and rich. But when you look at the life of Jesus also, like, he wasn't just sitting on his butt, you know, he was.
Yeah, right.
In the temple, and he was worshiping, and he was learning, and he was doing some teaching himself. He was developing his own skills. And that's so much of what this leadership team is about, is we want to see you grow as people. We want you to have the space to discover who you are. And we want to give you sort of these tasks and these skills that will help you in that process as you do so, so that you can start to understand more what your giftings are, and you can work on your habits and your practices, and you can be challenged, and you can be in a context of people who love you and will push you towards the person of Christ in the process. So that's VI.
That's VI. And that's really good. And I got to say that some of the most rewarding work you and I get to do is when you see someone who didn't think that they could try it and then become that which they didn't think they could be. And it's like so cool. Yeah. And so that was VI. It's great stuff. I am going to steal the next two.
Oh my goodness, Peter.
So greedy. I'm thinking that they go together. They go together. So I'm going to do VII, which is 7. And this is where I get really tested. Is it VIII?
Yeah.
Okay, VIII. So VII 7 is life pre-12. I often find myself wanting to keep this story front and center of like, why do we care so much about this? Why are we talking about this at one of our 10 podcasts? Why are we doing this? And I think it's because, you know how like people who like went through the Great Depression see the world through that lens for like the rest of their life?
Right, yeah.
They could have a pantry full of food, but like they still think in sort of a scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a student in college life and was maybe not as privy to sort of cultural elements of the ministry, but then I was on staff as an intern in a sort of a young director, and I'm still young, by the way.
Are you?
Yeah. What we would do every year is we would do something similar to this. We would sort of call people to be in leadership roles, and we talk about the importance of leadership. And most of the time, it just sort of worked swimmingly. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't have to put a ton of emphasis into it because people just did such a good job leading. Mm-hmm. And it sort of just worked itself out. But then the ministry sort of started to dwindle a bit, and sort of like the energy and the enthusiasm for the ministry started to dwindle a bit. And I think that I felt bad about that. And I sort of felt down about that. Mm-hmm. And I figured that people's enthusiasm for the ministry and even to lead in the ministry would probably be less. And so I started to notice that I changed the way that I talked about leadership. I started to assume that people didn't want to do it. Mm. I started to sort of forget everything that we talked about at the beginning of this, that like what you're meant to do is to serve in this kingdom. I forgot that. And I had a different story in my head. Oh, college life needs people to lead it and no one's going to want to do it. So I sort of lived into that story and I changed the way that I pitched it to people. I would say things like, oh, it's not going to be that hard. We need these leaders. It's not going to be that tough. You can fit it in. Don't worry about it. You know, and so I'm already assuming that there's an objection to it. Part of the reason I did that was because there was just a few years where it felt like we had such good leaders in the roles and things just weren't happening. Things just weren't clicking and people were disappointed and I was disappointed. And like I said, it sort of changed the way that I saw leadership. I think what it did was it just created this sort of passive culture where if you're being told by the leader that what you're signing up for isn't that big of a deal, isn't that robust, you can just easily fit it in, then you're not going to take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. Or when push comes to shove, it's going to take a back seat. And I think that just creates sort of a thin culture. It's not a big, deep vision that you're walking towards. You're just filling a role. And the other thing that happened was that I started in this place of deficit when I would ask them about it. And so often in the college life year, even if you're a growth group leader, you might need to plan an event or you might need to help set up for an event. But when I was in this sort of deficit mindset, I felt so bad about asking for anything extra because it's like, in my mind, you were already doing me a favor by taking a leadership role that you probably didn't want because the ministry was kind of small and it was sort of dwindling in excitement. And so I thought, you're already doing me a favor. I can't ask you to do me another favor. Mm-hmm. And so you notice how far this is from the vision we talked about at the beginning. You were meant to serve and create in this world. And what I'm saying is, no, we just need a role to be filled. And can you please do it? I know you probably don't want to, but could you please do it? We need someone to do it. Please, 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 please. And I really think that created a thin leadership culture. Mm-hmm. It just didn't mean much to be a leader in college life. And so that's VII. And now we're going to move to VIII, which is 8. And so it leads right from that, which is just this idea of thick and thin leadership cultures. That I think the staff at that time, what we really thought was necessary is to just change that particular culture. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I started to think that was that I went and worked for 2 summers at Mount Hermon. Mm-hmm. And similar to what you're describing at Sunshine, it just meant something to be a counselor. Like there was just a culture that we had with like shared language and shared convictions. And we knew it was hard. And when it was hard, we relied on each other and we were for each other and we cried together and we laughed together. And there were these inside jokes and it all just created this like thickness mm-hmm. of like what it meant to be a counselor. And it really felt like you were swept up into it, that you weren't every day having to decide, am I going to do this or not? You just every day went and contributed to the same culture that you were a part of yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the support that was there, the fun that was there, the hard work that we had to do mm-hmm. all contributed to it. It felt like a thick thing. It really felt like you could feel it. And I felt in comparison, college life leadership culture felt so thin. We didn't have shared language. We didn't have shared convictions. We didn't have even shared stories. So what we want to do was sort of create a thicker leadership culture. And what we thought was that because I had been downplaying the responsibility of leadership, I think that that also downplays the reward. Because exactly what you were talking about, it's in those sort of mini deaths mm-hmm. that you actually experience a lot of life. And even the idea of, what is it? The seed of potential is cracked under the weight of responsibility, right?
Yeah.
You are never going to reach your potential if the responsibility is kept low. So what is key in making a thick leadership culture is to say, no, actually, there's a high responsibility here with what we're doing. If you take on this role, like it's a lot and you're asked to do a lot, and which is really wonderful. Think about how cool it is that you're trusted to shepherd your people and to learn how to lead a Bible study and to walk with people through hard times. Like those are skills that are going to be so valuable for the rest of your life. And you might not think you can do it, but you can do it. We're just going to say from the get-go, this isn't going to be a lot of responsibility. If you're not interested in that, then this might not be the team for you. But we're thinking it's not just high responsibility, but with that high responsibility comes high reward.
Right.
And the reward comes from being a part of a team that feels like a family. It comes from growing in yourself and maturing spiritually and getting new skills and accomplishing things together. Like all that just feels really good and wouldn't be there without a higher responsibility. And so that's really part of the heart of why we made that change. And I realize that now we're getting to the point where I'm the only one that knows what it was like before. But I think it's important to tell that story so we kind of know our history and know why do we care about this so much and why do we put so much emphasis on it and why do we think it's an awesome thing to do? Because we think that if you apply for this and you become a member of the 12, you're going to be asked to do a lot, but you're also going to have this reward and it's going to be hard, but it's going to be drenched in laughter and it's going to be frustrating at times, but it's going to be drenched in growth and maturation and seeing things in yourself that you didn't know you had before. And all that is just really, really good stuff. So sorry I took two, but
I love it. It's like this culture that we have does require this responsibility, but now I'm sure that the way you ask people to partake in that responsibility is unapologetic because it's just such a worthy pursuit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of goes to this idea of like, I felt like I was always chasing people to do it. I was always like, can you please do this? Please do this. Please do this. And now on the premise of culture, I kind of say, hey, this team has to be for those who want it and for those who are willing to make this commitment and those who are willing to take this responsibility. So I sort of take this tact of, I'm not going to chase you for this. You're going to have to want this. And so it can't be my decision for you. Mm-hmm. Like you have to make this decision because there's going to be time when you are going to be frustrated that you made the decision. And if I made it for you, you're going to resent it. But if you made it for yourself, then you have the chance to push through it.
I love it. Okay. I am on IX, right?
Yes. Yeah, 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. IX, mentorship is scarce, but college life can help.
I'm intrigued.
Are you? I can remember so many conversations I've had with my friends about how we just have no idea what we're doing. And my goodness, would someone with a little bit of perspective please just help a sister out? And just these conversations about like longing for a mentor, longing for somebody who would come alongside us and kind of show us the way and not tell us what to do necessarily, but just walk with us and be there for us and help us sort of interpret what was happening around us. And I've had a lot of really good models in my life. Like I can remember in college, so many of my professors were people I wanted to be like, and there were people I was looking up to and I could look down the barrel of life and be like, one day I would like to embody that sort of value or whatever. But not so many people that were like, okay, let's get in the nitty gritty day-to-day life. What are your questions? What are you wrestling with? let me help you with that on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
And I feel a little kind of silly pitching this because I'm saying like, you can have that in me. But
no, but Miriam, there's been many people who have told me that that is you for them. Hmm. So feel free to assume that position.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, one of the most rewarding parts of being in this role for me has been the chance to walk with students through all of the questions that they have, all of the nitty-gritty day-to-day life stuff. And I mean, I don't have many answers, but I have a deep interest in growth and development of our students. And for people who are on the 12, you get a chance to meet with me or meet with you to have a little bit of mentorship along the way as you are navigating a lot of the complications of life and of college and of all the things that come along with that.
I love it. IX? That's IX?
That's IX. And because you took two, I'm also going to take two.
Wow.
I know.
Okay.
So X or 10, learning how to fail. I hate this one.
Make the case.
Well, okay. I'm really bad at failing.
Is that a humble brag that you just don't fail very much?
Gosh, both of these make me sound really presumptuous. I'm just going
to
trust
that people... As much as I try to fail, I cannot fail.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I certainly fail, but you know, I see people have this sort of fearlessness about things that they're willing to take risks because they know that if they fail, they're going to be okay. Their identity is not shattered. Who they are is not, you know, called into question. And for me, I feel a lot more of that. Like, okay, if I take this risk in this situation and I fail, that says something about me. And yeah. I've started to challenge that in myself and to take risks that I wouldn't normally take because those are the points of growth so often. And that's a really healthy practice to have, is to put yourself in situations where you might fail, but there's really high reward and a lot of growth potential there. And in the 12, there's a lot of space for that because you're going to be put in new roles, doing things that you've never done before, like leading Bible study or leading Lectio Divina or talking with strangers at Welcome Week or doing the slides for Tuesday Night College Life or leading worship or giving announcements, whatever it may be. There's a lot of opportunity for the development of skills, but at the same time, because those are growth opportunities, there's always space for failure. And, you know, there are going to be times when you're going to be learning and you're going to feel like things didn't go exactly how you wanted them to. And there are going to be times when it feels like you've outright failed, but you get to do so in a context and a culture of love and support. So just having a community that will challenge you to take risks that might lead to failure, but to know that in that failure, you're still loved, you're still supported, and you can take a deep breath knowing that, it's a huge gift and not necessarily something you're going to find in, you know, work settings that you have later on down the road. And so I think that now and here is the best place to start venturing into the territory of learning how to fail.
That is good stuff. So that's X.
That's X.
That's X. That's 10. Okay. I'm going to do X1. And X1 is just X. Oh, gosh. I'm going to do XI.
XI. I like that this was your idea. And I was like, no, it's going to go terribly. And you're like, it's going to be great.
XI. The whole time. XI is expectations.
Nice. I see what you did there.
And we talked a lot about the responsibility. What are the expectations? What are the responsibilities? If you were to apply for the 12, what are you signing up for? Just a really quick thing. In college life, the 12 is open for juniors and seniors, which leaves the sophomores in sometimes a tricky spot, which you realize. And so all I can say is that for the sophomores, your sophomore year is a really precious time. And it's also, it can be a really hard time. And so we want you to thrive in your sophomore year. And a lot of that is committing to your people and committing to this ministry. And then when you're a junior and senior, having these 2 years of leadership. And part of that is because we saw in the past how when sophomores would be in leadership pretty early on, then by the time they were seniors, they were sort of spent. They were not as stoked on leadership. And so we wanted there to be sort of an arc to your time in college life. And so for juniors and seniors who are wanting to apply, this is what you're going to be looking at for your expectations. You're looking at making a June to June commitment. So it starts June 1st of 2020. That's the commitment. And really what that means is that basically that we're going to do a summer preparation program, that there's part of your responsibilities is to sort of prepare yourself in the summer. And what we generally do is we read a book together and we talk about it, interact about it, and do some practices together while we get ready for the year. But it also means that when I make this commitment, when I sign on the dotted line, I'm making the commitment for the year. I'm not going to be able to back out of it. Then you're committing to a pre-Welcome Week retreat with the rest of the 12. It's for inspiration. It's for training you on how to be a leader, training you on how to do Welcome Week. And it might just be the greatest weekend of the entire year. We eat good food together. We play games together. We talk about our lives. lives, and a lot of the bonding comes during that retreat. And so that would be a thing you're committing to. You're committing to 50 hours of time during Welcome Week. And Welcome Week, for those who maybe know or maybe don't know, is going to look different this year. So it might not look the exact same. But basically what you're committing to is a lot of effort on the very, very front end of the year to really welcome in students well. We say 50 hours, and that's where we're going to keep the commitment at, because we don't exactly know what it's going to look like yet, how to do Welcome Week in a new way now that orientation is changing. You're also committing to attending four of five Sunday morning meetings. So we meet to continue training, inspiration, tell stories of God at work, pray together. We meet 5 Sundays a quarter, and you're committing to attending 4 of those. And then lastly, you're committing to just a relationship with Miriam or a relationship with me. And what that means is that we're going to be spending a lot of time together. You're committing to an every other week, hour and a half meeting with 2 or 3 other leaders and either Miriam or myself. And also a relationship where we have some freedom to encourage you in some directions, or to admonish, or to point out things that might not be consistent with the character of Jesus, or to point out things that might not be consistent with the life of faith that we are kind of agreeing to living together. So just know that if you apply for this and, you know, we're together, there's going to be maybe some hard conversations, and we think that that is for your good and ultimately for your joy. And so that's the commitments. Those are the expectations. Those are the types of things that you want to weigh if you're interested in applying. Can I say yes to these things? And even if you're not quite sure yet, I encourage you to fill out an application, and then we will talk about it soon. But that is XI.
XI, I love it. Now for the final thing, we've got XII, or number 12. Peter and I have gotten to share a bit about our vision for the 12 and why we think it's important, some of the history, expectations, all of that stuff. And so I'm sure that you are ready for us to stop talking and to shut up.
Mercilessly.
So for XII, we have a couple interviews that we have done with a few of the students who are in the 12 right now, where they just are going to share some of their experiences, ways that they've grown, what some of the rewards and the responsibility have been. And you get to hear their thoughts on the 12 in their own voice. So here are some interviews with some of our students.
All right. Well, I have with me 2 of your illustrious leaders, 2 of the 12, 1/6, if we really had just 12 leaders. And I would say your names, but I would like for you to introduce yourselves. Who am I speaking to right now?
Hello, I'm Madeline Peterson, or most know me as Maddie. I'm a freshman growth group leader.
Beautiful. I love it. Who else?
Hey there, guys. I'm Paul Mutz, a skinny blonde guy. You might notice me around, rock climber. But yeah, sophomore growth group leader.
Amazing growth group leaders, both of you. And it's great to talk to you both, because you've been in the ministry now for 4 years, and you've been leaders for 2 years. And from my view, have really blossomed into these really complete and equipped people. And so what we might want to think about is, who are you guys in the community? What role do you have in the 12, and sort of what are your responsibilities? So Paul, why don't you answer first?
So my responsibilities inside the 12 is being a growth group leader, specifically for the sophomores. What that mainly entails is, once a week, I will be meeting with my growth group leaders to plan for said growth group. We'll go over the passage, we'll talk about notes that we want to bring up, interesting ideas, opening questions. And then the other day of the week is when we actually meet with all our sophomores. Usually takes about 2.5 hours if you're there from start to finish, which as a leader you are. And your whole job is just caring for whatever your class is and helping them dig deeper in the Spirit and being that seed for them.
Nice. And would you describe the growth group as fun?
Is fantastic a word that I'm allowed to use?
Fantastic is a great word. Terrific. Maddie, what about you? What do you do, and what do your responsibilities look like?
My responsibilities are similar to Paul. I am a freshman growth group leader, and I lead it with 5 other leaders. So there's 6 leaders in total. And we also meet weekly to plan for our growth group, so it flows well. Like, we pick the passage, we pick who's going to say what and what we're going to do. And we try to make it as fun as possible, which I feel like we've succeeded. I feel like it's fun. I hope they do too.
I hear rave reviews. And okay, wait, help me understand. So you have your planning meeting and then you have the actual growth group time. Are you doing much with your growth group outside of those times?
Yes. I love getting to know the freshmen. So I love meeting with them and talking with them one-on-one or in group settings. Yeah, we do a lot of stuff outside of growth group too, to like, because we just love each other.
What's your favorite part about like being a growth group leader specifically? So not being on the 12, but the actual role and responsibility of being a growth group leader. Do you have a favorite part?
My favorite part would be how close I've gotten with the other leaders and just getting to know the stories of the freshmen and getting to know them in-depthly, knowing their heart. And it's just really enjoyable.
Paul, any favorite part about being a growth group leader?
Well, actually, now that I think about it, I don't know why I didn't say this for one of your previous questions, but one of the things I do outside of growth group was Paul's office hours. I just got to chill and get to know each one of the sophomores, kind of what they're at and what they're doing in school and what they do for fun and like where their stresses are and them as beings. It was great getting to know them as people and not just leading them. Like, you're taking on a multifaceted role.
Yeah. You know, so you just talked a little bit about the responsibilities in a way that you probably heard me ad nauseum talk about being sort of high responsibility, high reward. So you just talked a little bit about the responsibility. I'm curious to know how you would put in your own words, what has been the reward?
The reward I was thinking about the most actually has to be my personal growth on that one. When applying to be a growth group leader, and then also that I've heard this from other leaders too, they always have this thought of, I'm not a good enough Christian to be a growth group leader. I'm not at that level yet. But like, you join the 12 knowing like, okay, I want to get to that level to where I can shepherd people. And so I think one of the biggest rewards is getting to that point. It's like, oh, I actually now have prayer as like a daily thing in my life. I know how to dig into the scripture. I kind of can shepherd people through some hard times. I got that a little bit of experience. So actually becoming a more fulfilled Christian was one of the rewards that I didn't really consider when joining the 12, but has definitely came through.
That's awesome. Might you say, if you were to just grasp for some language, might you say, oh man, I feel like I've become more complete and equipped.
You didn't look at my mouth when I said that, but I mouthed the words as you said it.
That's really cool. Maddie, what do you think?
I have 100% grown, especially if you look at who I was as a freshman to who I am now. I think it's just crazy because I remember hearing complete and equipped agent of the King. And I was like, can I really get there? I remember sitting there as an underclassman and freshman being like, will I ever get there? Will there ever be a time? Like, is this really real? But it is. Like, I feel like it's crazy that I thought that. And then now I'm here and it's been a crazy journey. But I just remember thinking like sophomore year being like, I don't know if I'm ready to lead, but I know that this is something that I want to do the next step. And I think even taking that step, I have grown so much being on the leadership team. I was even at the beginning of this year talking to Miriam and I was like, I don't even know if I'm ready to lead freshmen. And she was like, okay, well, like, let's look at that. Like, what do you feel not ready about? And she was so encouraging. And just having Miriam there in our pod and really encouraging us and really like laying out what it's like to be a leader has been amazing. We did our own Bible study in our pod, which was probably one of the best things that I've ever done. Learning more about the Old Testament especially has just made me come into growth group with more to say and more questions to ask. So being on the 12 has really facilitated my learning because of the support that we get from you and Miriam.
Yeah. Yeah. I still remember seeing you lead for the first time when we were on sophomore retreat and you were just with the sophomore girls and laughing with them and you were leading them and there was never a time when you weren't with them. And I was like, Maddie just became a leader.
Yeah.
It happened. I was so proud of you. And it's just cool to think of you guys as seniors in this community who people look up to. Hopefully it's encouraging for them to hear that maybe that didn't happen just with a snap of the finger, but it came with taking on some responsibility, taking on some leadership role, and growing into this person. So I feel very proud of you guys. And I'm curious to know, you know, we just do a lot as a leadership team together. You know, our meetings, we do our dinners, we go on retreats, we do a lot during Welcome Week. And then you guys are also doing your own thing as growth group leaders. And I'm curious to know just what has been the most surprising thing about being on this team?
I think the most surprising thing has been just, this is going to sound weird, but getting to know you and Miriam a lot more. Because it feels like, you know, you say you have these meetings every week and you're like, oh, sorry, there's only 5 a quarter.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hoping that you guys can come. And it makes it sound like it's not fun. but it is. I look forward to these meetings.
Actually, whenever someone joins the 12, you give them like a, all right, it's going to be a pretty significant time commitment. And I still think I wasn't prepared for that when I joined my first time. But then as Maddie was saying, yeah, it's a spot on your calendar, but you're enjoying every spot on that calendar. You end up being grateful when it comes around.
Yeah, that's awesome. And let me ask you this too, Paul. Do you feel like you're enjoying it once you get there, or do you enjoy it when you have to get up in the morning?
Once I get there.
As well. Once you get there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Peter, you know my sleep schedule.
Paul's the last one there.
The other thing that I was surprised about is that, again, with my limited background in Christianity, that I was still able to have an impact on people's lives. I was surprised I was able to have an impact. And that was a very happy surprise to have.
Yeah, it's been really cool for me to watch you. It feels like the things that really get you excited are when you feel like you've had a role in someone's growth, which is cool. It shows your heart in a real clear way.
Too kind, Peter. Too kind.
So maybe the last question for you guys, if someone were to come up to you and say, hey, Maddie, hey, Paul, I'm thinking about applying for the 12. What do you think? Should I do it? Should I not do it? Just what would you say to them? What would be some things that you might tell them to help them through this process?
I think I would say 100% join, even if you feel like you're unprepared, and even if you feel like you might not be good enough, or you feel like you might not be needed. I mean, there's a plethora of things that you might feel about joining it. I would encourage people to join and to get involved, because I think that it is really an amazing experience. And even if you feel like, you know, there's all these responsibilities that you have to do, you know, like the meetings, and you have to go to every Tuesday night and do the Bible studies, I think that in the end, it is so rewarding. Like we were talking about before, that it doesn't even feel like it's a responsibility. It feels like that, oh, I get to meet with my family now. Like now I get to enjoy these people, or every Tuesday night I get to see everyone that I love. It is so enjoyable that it's not even a job. It's a wonderful thing. And like Paul was saying in the beginning, like that, I think that even if you feel like you are not spiritually ready, you will definitely get pushed and grow in this role as well. So that's encouraging.
I would just say, be prepared for a busy life. Be prepared for a fun life. Be prepared for a college life.
Dang, man. That's like, close the podcast with that. We're done. No one can say anything else. That's incredible. I love it. All right, Maddie and Paul, you know what time it is if you've been listening to the podcast. It is time for America's favorite segment. It is Quarantine Corner. And just to remind everyone what Quarantine Corner is, we are stuck in shelter in place, which means we have all sorts of time indoors and around our house that maybe we didn't have before, and we're wondering how to fill it. So we're going to give some recommendations on how people can be filling their time in quarantine. And so I'm going to go first. I'm going to take the lead, but we're going to hear from you guys after this, what your quarantine corner is. Finally, someone can hear from someone who's not old. Finally, they can hear from the youngins like yourself. So my quarantine corner is a little story. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called The Lord of the Rings.
That's the one that takes place in space, right?
Yeah, it takes place in space, Paul. But I don't know if you were like me when you first encountered this little story, but I watched the movies and I just had no idea what was going on. I mean, no idea what's going on. I guess that's not true. I knew there was a ring. I knew it was powerful. I knew they were trying to get it to the volcano to destroy it. And I knew that the hobbits were small. And I knew that Gollum was in bad shape. That's kind of what I knew, okay?
So you knew like the whole movie?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. So I basically knew the whole movie. But then why did it need to be 14 hours? I guess if that was the whole movie. So I kind of thought I didn't like Lord of the Rings because I think I was just too dumb when I saw it first. I think I was just legitimately too dumb to enjoy it. Just all the names and the places really, really got to me. But our Bible study has been doing these movie nights on Saturday, and the last 2 weeks have been Lord of the Rings, and it is so good. Okay, it is so good. Are you familiar? Are you Lord of the Rings fans, either of you?
No, never seen it.
I'm aware that a college lifer's birthday is on one of the Lord of the Rings people's birthday. That's about the most
connection. One of the Lord of the Rings people's birthday?
Yeah, Frodo's birthday is a college lifer's birthday. I'm not at liberty to tell you which one.
Frodo or Elijah Wood?
Frodo.
Actual Frodo.
Actual Frodo in the books.
Okay. I was going to tell you all the things that when I was watching this time, I didn't know, but it sounds like you are in the dark as well. But just for maybe the listeners at home, okay, I was sitting there with Katie and I was asking all sorts of questions. I was just thrilled with it and couldn't understand. I was like, so does the ring always make you invisible? Or there are, you know, these big black horses with these big like cloaked figures. And I was like, well, who are these? Do we know who those are? Have we found that out yet? What's going on there? And I just kept asking things like, okay, so it's Sauron and Saruman. Feels pretty similar. Those are two bad guys that feel pretty similar. Should have seen that coming from Saruman. And I kept asking like, why is he evil? What's going on with him? And so I just didn't know much at all, but it's so good. And so I would encourage anyone to just get lost in a different world for a little bit. Watch Lord of the Rings. And here's why I think I really liked it too, is there's all these scenes where they unfurl the ring from the hand and it's just sitting there in Frodo's palm. And then all these characters have to come and look at it. And it's this really powerful ring. It gives you lots of powers. This is a novice trying to tell you the story, but it also like warps your soul and you like, you want the power. And so all these people have to look at the ring and kind of ask the question, like, if I had the ring, would I destroy it like it should be done? Or will I take it for power? And like everyone has to sort of face this choice. And it's like our story, you know, like, are we going to say yes to what seems good in our eyes? Or are we going to sort of trust the goodness of God? So I really like that. And also, I think, you know, I've been reading the news and I've been watching Tiger King, both real stories, right? And I was just so grateful to get in a different world, to be in some fiction for a little bit, because I think like truth can be told in a new way with fiction. So that is my quarantine corner, Lord of the Rings. Any thoughts?
I have questions.
Sure.
One, did Katie answer your questions that you were asking her during the movie?
Yes, Katie did answer my questions. Oh, another pro tip for Lord of the Rings, you just must watch it with subtitles. You can't get away with... There's words like Osgiliath and Isengard and, you know, Saruman and Sauron. It's like, you can't follow that with just your ear. There's no way.
Absolutely so, not.
No, yeah, Katie's legit.
She a fan?
She's not a super fan. There's definitely super fans out there, but she's a fan.
You're saying everyone has to decide whether or not they want to choose the ring, but isn't the whole thing like everyone goes for the ring, but Frodo is the only one who doesn't?
Yeah, but like Aragorn is looking at it and he's like, you know what? I would go to the ends of the earth with you to destroy it. So it's like he faces the choice and succeeds. But like Boromir, Sean Bean, he like sucks. He's like, give me the ring. It's mine. He fails the test. So it's pretty good. I would recommend it. Little known story, Lord of the Rings. What about you guys? Who wants to go first and give us your quarantine corner?
I have discovered a new fun activity that I think is the funnest thing that everyone should do. And it's perfect because we're all in quarantine. So me and Allie have started doing this Zoom exercise class.
That's incredible.
Zumba.
Is it called Zumba?
No. I wish. We thought of that though.
Huge missed opportunity.
When we teach our Zumba class over Zoom, we're going to call it Zumba.
Yeah.
But it is so funny because we like, you know, like most people just like do workouts like on YouTube or whatever, and it's not live. Like you can do that, but it's not as fun. You know, it is so fun to see other people doing exercises. like we put it on our TV. And so the lady who's doing it, she's like spotlight doing it. And so we're like following. But then she'll like click on each of our pictures so that like everyone can see the other people exercising.
How many people are exercising?
So like there's like 10 of us.
How did you get into this
and
class?
And so it's super funny. Allie babysits the kids of the woman who does it.
Okay.
Yeah. So we got into this class and it's hilarious because me and Allie are like, you know, doing our like dance. And then she'll like spotlight these people. And we just laugh because like it's hilarious. People's cameras are like not on them. It's like just their face, and like it is so funny. And then
what do you do when you get on the spotlight?
Oh, we definitely go the extra mile.
Crank it to 11.
Like, we rock out, you know. We're like, oh, it's us. And we're like,
it's like when people get on the dance cam at a baseball game, and then you get really excited.
Yeah, but it is so fun. So my quarantine corner is that everyone should do not just an exercise on the internet, but an exercise over Zoom, so they can see everyone else doing the exercise because it is hilarious.
That's so good. All right, Paul, what about you, brother?
Quick question for Maddie before we switch. After Zoom classes, which muscle groups are you feeling like, man, I'm going to be buff by the end of the quarter?
All of them.
Glutes, traps.
All of them.
All the muscles?
All of them.
Yeah. It's a pretty hefty, like, dance. Your arms, your legs, your body, your head. It's like everything is moving.
Everything's zooming.
Yeah.
Are you drinking enough water?
Yeah. I think there's some times where she, like, does sets, 10-minute sets. So she goes, okay, everyone, get some water. And then we, like, I'll go get water.
But you don't even have to obey her because she's not even in the same room.
But she does come up to the camera and watches us, and she'll be like, yes, Maddie, yes. Or like, yes, Allie, I'm loving it. Like, she'll call out people. It's hilarious. It's really fun.
Paul Mutz,
Peter,
what's your quarantine corner?
My quarantine corner, it's a two-parter. Step one is download apps on your phone for various board games. Specific two that I recommend are Backgammon and then also Words with Friends. Backgammon, I play solo on the phone, and then Words with Friends, I play with my girlfriend Kendall, and I've been destroying her the last couple games, but that's irrelevant. The whole point is you get good at the game on your phone, and then amongst your family in real life, you challenge them to the game again. You're like, I don't know how I got better. It's just you must not be practicing hard enough. Yeah. Natural skill over here.
That's right. That's right. So backgammon is interesting that there's an app. It's such an old game. I'm surprised it made it its way into the 21st century.
You do not play with other people on backgammon. I have a computer that plays against me. I don't think there's apps that are popular enough for
yeah. Well, probably it's like an abacus.
Yeah.
So you've been crushing Kendall.
Yeah, I learned words like za, which I personally don't think counts as a word, but it gets like 30 points when you play it correctly.
A little triple letter on that Z.
That is so funny.
All right, that sounds good. So we can download Words with Friends and play with you.
Oh, absolutely. I am there.
I'm pretty good at it, so.
Then challenge me, Maddie. Bring it.
All right, well, that is it for Quarantine Corner. Thank you guys for your thoughts. Thank you for your service and love to this community and to the King. It's been fun to have you here, but also in general to know you for 4 years, and I will not be ready to say goodbye when the time comes.
You'll make me cry.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
Love you, Peter.
Love you.
That's showbiz, baby.
Nailed it. Well, Kyle and Jess, thanks so much for taking the time to chat a bit about your role in the 12. It's exciting to be here this morning. It's a good way to start the day. I would love if you guys could just share a little bit about what you do on the 12. You guys are both on our production team. I know a bit about what that means, but can you share with everybody else your role and the responsibilities that come with that?
Yeah, so I'll start. I'm the worship lead here, which means I organize the worship team. I choose who's on the worship team playing music up front, and I choose the songs, and I create the slides that you see. I send those to Jess. So if there's any mistakes on the slides, any incorrect words, that's fully my fault, not hers.
Awesome. Thanks, Kyle. Jess, how about you?
So I am the producer of Tuesday Nights. If, for say, we were in a room this quarter, I would be the one reserving it. For Tuesday Nights, my role is putting together those slides that you see up on the projector, any technical difficulties, running in to fix those. Never prayed harder prayers than during a technical difficulty in front of like 100 people. God always pulls through. So,
yeah, I wish that everyone could see like a montage right now of all of the times that things almost went terribly wrong, but then you two did some magic and saved the day.
I think I have prayed over UC Davis projectors more than any person has prayed for a projector ever.
That's awesome. What has been surprising for you guys since being on the 12?
I think something that really surprised me was being more behind the scenes of what goes on in college life. So much thought gets put into every single little detail of everything that happens in college life. And when you're like a freshman and a sophomore, you're more on the receiving end of that. And I felt very loved and nurtured and like I had just been immersed in this really amazing community. But when you're a junior, senior, and you're looking into joining the 12, you kind of get behind all that. And there's just so much thought put into everything. At every meeting, you know, everyone's always thinking about you, which is kind of amazing to think that when I was younger, there was probably people talking about me at meetings, like specifically, and looking out for me. There's just so much put into everything. I think that's why college life is so great, because like just so many people care.
Well, for me, I was surprised by how integrated being on the 12 becomes into your whole life. Just into your friends and your habits and your thoughts, my passions. I find that, you know, living as a leader, like in college life, it really affects the way that I am like looking at the community and looking at my own life. We get to do a lot of spiritual practices together. It really makes you be a lot more thoughtful about how what you do kind of influences the community and what you want, what influence you want to have on the community, just in what you say and kind of how you're perceived in what you do.
Right. It's interesting because you guys are really culture makers for College Life. And when you step into the role, you get to see all the ways that that actually plays out. I know that when Peter has pitched the leadership team in the past, he's talked about both the high level of responsibility that you guys have, as well as the high reward. So I'm curious what some of the rewards have felt like they've been for you guys.
So personally, for the production role, it was really cool how you kind of inherit this little genealogy of people who have done it before you. And so that was really cool that, like, I had, like, these ancestors of, like, Tanner and Amanda, and, like, someday I'll have, like, my own little Padawan to raise up. So I think that's really cool to kind of be a part of some kind of, like, little heritage there. I don't know. It's weird, but it's been, I think it's special. I think also in our 12 meetings, we all share a lot of what our goals are, what we're up to. Just you see really directly into people's heart and how much they care about everyone. And I think it's been really rewarding just being able to hear so intimately how people care and how they go about taking to action what they want to see change. I just think it's really challenging and really compelling for myself personally to be influenced by this really amazing group of people. And I think our culture is to always try to better each other. And so I think it's been really rewarding to always feel that challenge present every week.
Right, to be on a team with people who have a shared goal and to be challenged and encouraged by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, the main reward of being a leader is also just sharing in a smaller community with some really amazing people as well. I really like the idea that what Jesus intends for us is not to be living our faith alone, but to be living it in community and in service. And I think I learned a whole lot this whole year about what it means to be serving with other people with your whole life. And just, you know, you get to share in victories, in defeats, and in difficulties, and you grow a lot closer with the people that you work with. I grew to love the community a lot more, and I grew to love all the leaders a lot more for sure, and appreciate all the work that they do. Yeah, I think that serving a community is the best way to connect and feel invested in that community.
Yeah, it's incredible to me to think about kind of the mystery of what happens when you give yourself away with a group of other people, when you choose to serve, and why it is, I don't quite know, but there's always just a unique bonding that comes from the blood, sweat, and tears of all of it, and the laughter as well. What might you guys say to someone who's considering joining the 12?
I think you should strongly consider being on the 12. If you like community and happiness, then the 12 is great.
I'll pass.
if you like good things, you should try it. No, the 12 is a very good thing. But I think, yeah, you should consider for sure, if you have the time and or mental bandwidth to be thinking and talking about the community a whole lot. But I also think that it's worth every bit of time and effort that you put in, and that you really do get as much as you put in and more.
Yeah, I'm a fan of happiness, so that's a great reason. I think also you become like the people that you're around. Mm-hmm. That's just life. And I think surrounding yourself with people like the people on the 12, it reaches out into all aspects of your life, and it always kind of puts you in the mindset, even in like your classrooms or if you're working with your family. It will change the way that you see your situations, and you'll see more opportunities to honor God and honor others. And also, I think when I first heard of the 12, and I don't know if this is a conception that a lot of people have, I thought it was all like Bible study leaders or all growth group leaders, but there's actually a variety of different jobs. So I think it would be good to let people know just that if there is something that you're very gifted in, there's probably a role that fits that gift that you have.
Yeah, that's a really good point. How do you guys feel like you personally have grown by being on the 12?
In all the ways. No, I've grown a lot from the conversations I've had with you, Miriam, and with Peter, and with all the other leaders. I've grown especially in being more thoughtful about my actions and my disciplines. I guess a better way to put that is in my habits. I've just become a lot more thoughtful about how what I do affects what's in my heart and how what's in my heart affects my influence on the community. Hmm. Having, yeah, this extra time of like pods with Peter and becoming a discipleship leader has been an amazing experience for me. Just because first, it makes me force myself to create habits that I have always known have been like good for me, like reading scripture more often and being more thoughtful, being more mindful, spending more time in solitude, sometimes just thinking and talking to God. And yeah, I've really learned how to love other people better in being a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kyle, I've even loved with both of you guys getting to meet weekly in our production meetings, and Kyle, hearing you talk through what it means to be a good worship leader, and not just to be skilled, which you are very skilled, but to lead well and to wrestle with like, how do I teach well? How do I guide people on my team through this well? And it's been so, so cool to see you throughout the year take so much initiative and like, I don't just want to be good at playing the guitar or leading worship, but I want to learn how to shepherd. And I know that I also need to be shepherded in order to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I've learned a lot about how any part of your life can become a ministry. And for me, worship, like the worship team, has become such an amazing place to learn how to practice ministry in a way that's not just leading a Bible study, which I think is great. Like our growth group leaders have done an amazing job this year. But yeah, in addition to that, I'm learning about how just talking to someone is equally ministry.
That's cool. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I think the 12 has definitely helped me become a little bit of a bolder person. I could very easily be like more reserved, but I like that you get given these little responsibilities like leading pods, being in a pod, learning to kind of speak what's on my mind more has been a huge improvement for me. I think we're really taught vulnerability being in the 12, and that vulnerability isn't a weakness. And I think that's been a huge lesson that has definitely permeated into other aspects of my life. And I think everyone's lives as we've been going through this year.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because Jess, you have learned so many technical skills in being in just the role that you're in, but it's almost like through learning those skills that your character is also being developed. And I love how you said that you've become a more bold person. And then when you went to go explain that, you talked about vulnerability and how being more vulnerable has somehow impacted your boldness. Which doesn't usually seem like that's how it works, but I think that's really insightful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, on the technical side of things, I've learned how to copy and paste like no other. Control-C, Control-V, all day, all night. Also, personally, I know when I first started, and this one goes out to whoever wants to be trained by me next year for production, I was utterly mortified whenever like something small would go wrong, or I'd always be like super confused and running to Tanner like, help me. But over time, I think definitely confidence builds. Yeah. and experience, and that's definitely improved a lot. So right. I'm excited to impart that onto someone else next year.
Well, guys, thanks so much for taking the time to answer some questions about your role in the 12. I'm sure this will be really helpful for folks who are considering applying. Before we wrap things up, though, I would love to hear your guys' quarantine corners. So, Kyle, what you got? What's your quarantine corner?
Well, my quarantine corner comes in two parts, as my life is diverging into two very different parts.
Okay.
An unhealthy one and a healthy one.
Okay.
So, the healthy quarantine corner has been using my parents' exercise bike while having a woman on a screen yell at me.
Any particular woman or?
Her name is Allie Love, and she's wonderful. I'm not much of a health nut normally, but, you know, being cooped up inside has been very difficult. And I found, like, for the first week of being home, I really did absolutely nothing physical. Uh-huh. And so I found I needed to do something. And my parents have this exercise bike where a woman yells at you.
Nice.
And it's been amazing.
Whatever you need to do to stay motivated.
Yeah, right before recording this podcast, I was just having someone screaming into my ears about, you can do it. You know, you're strong. You're a warrior. Very clearly aimed at suburban moms. But it's been great. So my unhealthy quarantine corner has been playing Nintendo's new game, Animal Crossing, and fishing during the lectures that I find boring.
I don't know. Well, yeah, that's probably unhealthy.
It's not healthy for my education, but some of those lectures are so grating to listen to. It's been really my only solace sometimes.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks, Kyle. Jess, what you got for Quarantine Corner this week?
Okay, so my thing's kind of new, but out of the past 5 days, I have done yoga on 3 of them. And so this kind of spun from, again, being, like Kyle said, stuck inside and really contemplating the fact that I have both the physique and the flexibility of an uncooked spaghetti noodle. It's true. So I was like, I am going to take this time and do something about this. And so I tried working out in a couple of different ways and it just didn't stick because I find working out so boring sometimes. Maybe if I had a woman yelling at me.
Yeah, that might help.
I'd highly recommend getting a woman to yell at you.
maybe that would get me on a bike or something. But I have really enjoyed on YouTube, there's like a million free beginners yoga things and just going through the day. And then once it hits about 5 p.m. or so, just really looking forward to going outside on my mat and having a woman this is kind of the opposite of Kyle's, I guess. Just very gently say, like, you are wonderful, and breathe in the earth's energy as you stretch to the sun. And it's just, it feels kind of goofy at first. It's been really great. Like, I really
That's relaxing.
Genuinely look forward to it on days where every day is this day where you're stuck at your desk.
Right.
Working and stuff. Right.
So. Maybe you can lead a college life yoga lesson over Zoom.
Maybe. I mean, again, still at the flexibility stage of an uncooked spaghetti noodle, but maybe over time, you know.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, my quarantine corner, I am a huge fan of slippers. I think that everyone should have a pair of slippers. So my quarantine corner is that all of you go to Amazon right after you're done listening to this podcast and just type in slippers. Pretty straightforward. Do some browsing, choose some slippers you want. Go ahead and add those to your cart, check out, and then wait in anticipation for your slippers and then rejoice when they arrive so that you can be cozy while you're spending all of your days inside. So that is my quarantine corner. Thanks so much, guys, for answering some questions again. And I hope you guys have a great day.
Definitely. Thanks for having us.
All right. That's it for your pod and your staff. Thank you so much to Miriam for your wisdom, your care for these students and putting up with my antics. And a huge, huge, huge thank you to Jess and Kyle and Paul and Maddie. It is because of you that Miriam and I have just the best job in the world. Watching you grow and flourish and become the people you're becoming is the greatest treasure. And I'm never letting you leave. And again, if you're interested in applying for the 12, you can find the application in the episode notes. And we cannot wait to see this team start to take shape. As always, thanks to Josh Paskey and Kyle Jung, who just got thanked twice, who created the music for your pod and your staff. We love it. And if you want to hear something talked about on this podcast, message me at plnittler@gmail.com with your questions or your thoughts. And finally, to sign off, you should know that we love you more than we confused you with all this Roman numeral nonsense. See you next week.